Okay. Ms. Haley, will you call roll?
Chair Russell, Vice Chair Robinson, and Director Geisler are present. Director Shaw and ex officio member Ayala are excused.
Okay, we'll call this meeting to order. We'll begin with non-agenda public comment.
There are none.
There's no non-agenda public comment. Then we'll move on to ex parte communications. Actually, I'd like to make sure Mr. Robinson is in the room. Just let me ask that question. Today is the 10th. Okay. I will ask again at the beginning of an item if I want to make sure he's in the room. So are there any other ex parte communications? Are there any to disclose? Okay. No ex parte communications. Any potential agenda items by committee members? Okay. Then we have the consent agenda, and for this I would really like to, I will wait for Mr. Robinson to return so we can do that. And continue with the regular agenda. I will ask the director any ex parte communications to disclose for today's agenda.
No.
Seeing none, we will move on to the approval of the minutes. It's on the consent agenda. It has not been pulled from consent. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the meeting of March 13th? Okay. I can second it, I think.
Okay. And I'll probably just abstain.
Okay. There's a motion by Director Robinson, second by Chair Russell. All those in favor, please say aye. Oh, I'm sorry. We vote. We get to vote. Tech. Please vote.
The motion passes with Director Geisler abstaining.
Very good. With that, we'll call the first regular item, item number 6, the First and Beach Amendment. And Mr. Chopik, I believe you're presenting, and the applicant is there as well. Who will be presenting? I would be happy to take this. Are the parties for 1060C, item number 7, present?
Yes.
Okay, then let's take this out of order. We'll go to item number 7, Mr. Chopik.
Thank you.
1060 C Street.
Okay.
And on that item, we have 3 speaker slips at the moment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Chopik, planner for Civic San Diego. I'm presenting the 1060 C Street project. This was heard last night by the DCPC pre-design subcommittee, so I'll try and summarize some of those comments we received last night as I go through the presentation. This is the site. It's a 7,500 square foot site on the northwest corner of C Street and 11th Avenue. C Street currently has 2 traffic lanes that travel one way from west to east. 11th Avenue is also a one-way street with travel in, from south to north. This is in the northwest quadrant of the East Village neighborhood of the downtown community plan area. And I've highlighted here in yellow some of the projects that are adjacent or nearby that are currently in process, and also outlined in orange is the Ray, which is built but not shown in this aerial photograph. So the site is a 7,500 square foot site. The building proposes a 7.03 FAR, which is within the 6 to 10 base FAR for this site. It's a 9-story, 85 foot tall mid-rise building containing 72 dwelling units, 1 and 2 bedroom units. These are market rate units, and the applicant would be required to pay the inclusionary housing fee. There's 1,150 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor, fronting on C Street, with 9 off-street on-site parking garage spaces, and 66 off-site parking spaces would be located at one of the adjacent projects, most likely 11th and B, because that 11th and B project, which you saw a couple of months ago, does include additional parking for this site. C Street is a designated cycleway, which I'll talk about in a minute. Applicable downtown community planning goals are to provide an overall balance of uses, provide a range of housing opportunities, develop the Northwest as an intensive residential area in close proximity to transit, and to allow off-street and or shared parking arrangements where appropriate to maximize efficient use of parking resources. It should be noted that there is no parking deviation, as the Center City Plan District Ordinance does allow for off-site parking with CCNRs that would keep the parking arrangement in perpetuity. The land use district here is a residential emphasis land use district with limited vehicle access on both 11th Avenue and C Streets, so it's very constrained from an access point of view. And currently, it's within the commercial street overlay, requiring 60% active commercial on C Street. However, with the 12th code amendments, that commercial requirement would go away. The required permits are a Center City development permit and a planned development permit for four deviations. One for street wall frontage, as the building is set back on both side property lines on C Street and 11th Avenue. The ground floor height does not meet the minimum 12-foot clearance at the garage entry on 11th Avenue. The commercial space depth does not meet the minimum 25-foot depth for 75% of the frontage, with the remaining 25% frontage requiring a 15-foot depth. So we're short on commercial space depth here, and a request to reduce storage from 100% of the units to 30%. So some of the design issues and considerations here are to consider the overall massing and neighborhood fit. Does the project's overall massing and architecture present a development that's compatible with existing and planned development in the neighborhood? Ground floor materials, we've suggested an upgraded material here, where stucco panels are proposed above the garage, as the ground floor storefronts have an upgraded stone tile material, a white stone tile, and we suggest perhaps extending that above the garage, as that it appears to be part of the storefront appearance on 11th Avenue. However, some of the design issues that came up last night may result in some redesign of this garage entry, and I think the architect might address some of that with you. So one of the primary issues that was raised last night was in regard to loading, unloading, move-ins, move-outs, deliveries, and mail service. The project site is located here. This is a schematic from the Downtown San Diego Mobility Plan, where this two-way cycle track would be built along the north side of the C Street frontage here, and would eliminate one automobile travel lane, and thus there would be no parking on C Street with the two-way cycles track and the one-way travel lane just south of the bicycle track. And then on 11th Avenue, again, there, because of the traffic and demand on 11th, there would be no parking on C Street. And so this was identified as one of an area of concern, is how would move-in, move-out, mail packages and delivery occur for this site. So I think with that, I will turn it over to Bob Lusaskis, the project architect, and he'll present the building and concept to you.
Great. Thank you. And is there a way to get full screen up here on this site?
Let's go here to...
There we go.
Put it right here on duplicate slide. There we go.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. Okay, I'll first start off talking about some of the massing and site context. And we saw this as a neighborhood block really to fit into the existing fabric of the existing historic Y building on C Street. So this is a view looking at the C Street elevation, our project here at the corner of C and 11th. Adjacent to our building is the height of the Y building, roughly 20 feet lower in height. One of the deviations here is that we're not providing a 45-foot street wall. We're maintaining a 3-foot separation between the Y building and our building to provide some opportunity for light and air at the corners of the residential units. And additionally, the Y building does not have any windows on their side of the building. Then moving around the corner to 11th Avenue, this is our building in the context of the site. There are the existing SRO residential projects behind us. We're maintaining their site is 7 feet roughly off of the property line, where then our building faces another 5 feet off of our property line, allowing us 25% openings on this facade and elevation. And then this is the condition of the existing conditions in relationship to our proposed project. I'll start off taking a look at the ground level and how the streetscape works and functions. And as Bill mentioned, we had quite a long discussion last night on the operations of this building to make sure that we really fit in with the proposals for what's happening on both C Street and 11th. Lobby designated right at the corner of C and 11th, marking the corner of the building. And then we've lined commercial on C Street. And due to the constraints of the site, we weren't able to fully maintain 25 feet, but we were providing a portion of commercial at 25 feet in depth here. The goal was really to begin to merge the retail with the lobby and hopefully have this space support a small cafe that can be used as an amenity for the surrounding area as well as the residents in this building. There is one curb cut on 11th Street, the goal was to provide some parking on our site. We have a total of 9 spaces here, and these are really meant to be convenient spaces for the residents. We had some discussion of how these spaces get used. We feel that a space can be devoted to a flexible space for residents, so those bringing groceries to the building can easily have a spot that they load and unload goods. Another space can be dedicated to mail and Amazon, that from the garage they have easy access into our mail and Amazon lockers here. So the goal of providing some parking on this site we feel was really important. The remainder of the parking, as Bill mentioned, would be supported by the developer's 11th and B Street project. And that's why we provided an extra floor plate on that site, anticipating for the needs of this building. Another thing discussed last night was, how do you load this building for move in, move out, and how do you pick up trash? And we saw some flaws in the current scheme last night, where the ceiling height here isn't sufficient to allow for service vehicles to enter and exit our site. And through some discussions last night, we believe we can achieve on-street, off-street trash collection and loading for the units by removing a unit on the mezzanine above in this area. This would allow for then 18 feet clear at the ground level for trucks to get off-street, move in and out in this location here. The other nice thing it does is, as Bill mentioned, one of the deviations on this project was that for part of our elevation on 11th, we weren't meeting the requirement of 12 feet minimum ground level height. This would take away that deviation entirely. A view looking at the corner of C and 11th Street. And really, at the corner, as noted, this is our lobby entrance with canopy, and we really wanted to create a design with a mix of punched openings to sort of relate to the historic fabric of the Y building, and then have pops of moments of denoting the corner of the building with glassier elements and bay windows. Then looking at our building in the context of the Y building, we sort of configured the building so that the retail and lobby entrance really illuminates itself and is seen as a glass box at the building. We've taken some clues from the lines of the Y building, carrying in at our 14-foot height of canopy the lines of the ground level of the Y building. Although our floor-to-floor dimensions are different above, you know, we saw these moments of recess where we have our punched openings, you know, relating back to the color and texture of the Y building to really create a facade that is in relation to the adjacent building. Then moving around the corner on C Street, this is that loading area we were talking about. These windows would now be removed. We would allow this entire space and devote this over to loading and parking entrance. And then looking at 11th Street on the back facade of our building, facing the SRO houses, we're limited to 25% openings here, but by staggering balcony windows and unit windows, we've created an elevation that appears much more transparent than 25% open. Some of the materials that we're using, really a mix at the body of the building of stucco, punched openings, and window wall glazing. At the base, some stone accent and stone elements that are solid portions, metal panel canopies, and then using window mullions in two different colors at the punched openings, a darker charcoal, and at our window wall, metallic silver cream tone to really merge with the color of the stucco that we'll use. At the top of the building here, we plan on screening our mechanical roof deck with a trellis of vegetation to provide some green at the upper level roofscape for the adjacent buildings that will be looking down onto ours. Mentioned this briefly, but our parking our parking would be supported by primarily the adjacent building proposed at 11th and B, and this is the building that you saw a few months ago in relationship to the proposed C Street project. At night, since this is a low-rise building, we're facing neighbors. We didn't intend to use any architectural lighting on the body of the building. And as mentioned earlier, the goal was to really illuminate that ground level plane as a glass box. And we feel that the illumination and transparency of the retail and lobby, as well as just some accent down lighting in the canopies, will provide a glow of light at the base of the building. And then another view from C Street. And then very quickly looking at some of the upper levels, we're 10 units per floor. We're providing private open space through balconies, and 5 units have outdoor balconies. And then when we move up to the top floor, we've devoted the corner of the building, and this is why the building steps down and has trees at that corner. We're providing an outdoor amenity deck that is directly related to an indoor lounge that would be opened up to that deck. And then, as mentioned earlier, the goal is to provide a vegetated roofscape and roof screening and trellis system around the mechanical when seen from above on our roof. And thank you very much.
Great, thank you. Before we go to public comment, do we have any directors' questions in particular to clarify from the presentation? If not, then we'll go to, I have two speaker slips here in front of me. I have Gary Smith and I have Julie Hamilton. May I ask Ms. Hamilton, step forward, please. This is a speaker slip submitted in opposition.
Necessarily in opposition, but there are some significant concerns with this building that need to be resolved. My name is Julie Hamilton, and I represent ABM San Diego LLC, which happens to own the two apartment buildings between this building and the 11th MB project that will now be in a canyon. And we believe that this building has failed to consider our units in the design of the structure. In fact, the structure is designed with the 11th and B structure to create shear walls 85 feet high, 5 feet off the property line, creating a canyon for the buildings at 1130 and 1134 11th Avenue. The buildings don't step back in any way to prevent the canyoning effect. There are some additional issues. The projects will shadow these two buildings for almost 6 months of the year. They will be completely dark and have little air and light. The project as proposed, one of the questions we have is, where is the parking going to be vented to? There's no, we don't want the parking garage vented to our property. So tell us where you're going to vent the parking garage. There were a lot of issues that the design review committee brought up, the pre-design review subcommittee brought up last night, and I felt somewhat privileged to be in the presence of people with that much knowledge and skill, because they really did understand the design of this project. I see that the applicant resolved the loading zone issues, but there were other issues. The lack of storage. There's I think 30% of the required storage. I don't have the exact number, but it's greatly reduced. So people have nowhere to put their belongings in relatively small units. So now you're looking at issues of people putting their belongings on their balconies and their decks. They raise the issue of the access to the vault. The applicant is proposing a roll-up door to access their vault on C Street, but yet one of the architects at the meeting last night felt that they would not be allowed to have the vault access in that manner by SDG&E. They brought up the question of the building is built on a podium for the first several floors and then goes to wood frame construction, and the architects felt that type of construction would not support the design that was being presented and would have a significant impact on the view of the building from the exterior. I think the single biggest issue for my clients is that they're creating a canyon and giving no consideration to the apartments between the two buildings, and this needs to be resolved before the project goes any further. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hamilton. I next have Gary Smith, registered as neutral.
Good morning, committee members. Gary Smith, president of the Downtown Residents Group. As usual, neutral, because my board has not seen this yet. They'll be looking at it on Monday. I'm glad to see the architect is trying to do something about the garage. For those of you who may not be intimately familiar with that intersection, across the street is the intersection of the Blue Line, the Orange Line, and 17 different bus lines. They're at Smart Corner. It is a busy intersection. The police are there all the time. You are not going to double park on 11th, which is the on-ramp to the freeway, and you're not going to double park on C, where somebody may try to swerve around you and go into the front of the trolley. So that's not a workable solution. The nearest place to put a loading zone would be over on 10th by the Y. That'd be a long haul to do stuff like mail. In addition to this project, those two apartment buildings that are in between this project and the next project now are going to have that same issue, because they used to use the parking lot where this building is going up. So I don't know how they're going to cope with the issue. It's going to be tough. As far as a couple of the other things, wooden stucco buildings can be good, but if you look at the structure the architects were talking about, the windows right there on the corner, that's a tough road. And I'm sure the architects and the engineers can figure it out and make it work. It's not impossible. It's simply engineering. This building does fit in the context of the neighborhood. The contextual pictures, if you look at them, are very, very good. It is respectful to the historic Y building, although it's not exactly complementary or contrasting. It doesn't make the Y look ugly. And that's what you're concerned about when you're really talking about the historic building being there. In the other proposal, they propose putting a number of very low-income units in this building, and that would be consistent with a certain lesser amount of storage in most cases. However, comma, the majority of these units are still going to be market-rate units. If you do not provide storage, people's stuff will go somewhere. That's the whole reason why we have it in the community plan. This is not something that you all should be taking lightly. If you want to have the amount of storage readdressed, that's fine. But we should not be cutting it down to the point where there's no storage provided for a unit, because it will end up on the balconies. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. With that, we'll turn to the committee members. Do I have someone? I don't see anybody on the queue just yet. Ms. Geisler, Mr. Robinson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask the architect a question or two here. What is the cost per door for these units?
What is the cost for?
Per door.
Per door?
Per unit.
We don't have that information at the current time.
Who would?
We could get back to you, and I could have a conversation with the owner of the property.
Okay, that's a good boilerplate answer. So, there's no affordable housing. I heard what Mr. Smith just said. I don't know how you discern not having affordable housing because you want more place to put stuff. It would just seem to me that you would have that mixed in some kind of way. Now, I'm just going by what you say. This is the flavor of the community down there. There's a lot of rentals going on down there. We've just most recently approved a project in that area. And I can't understand why we can't figure out a way, because it's not sitting on the waterfront. It's in the neighborhood, in the fiber of the neighborhood. that we can't get people that may can't afford market rate in the place. How much are you paying for the fee?
I don't have information on that.
The inclusionary housing fee for 72 units would be $461,000.
$461,000. Okay. I think you need to do something about that. Everybody else is trying to do something, and we got a lot of people still stonewalling that, and it's just not fair. And they holler community plan, but this is in the plan. What would it take to make something like that happen?
Sure. Any other questions? Should I respond to that?
Yeah.
Okay. So our developer and building owner is conscious of this and has placed out in the community affordable housing. The project that you'll see next, the First and Beach project, one of the goals was to use this project as off-site for that project affordable housing. And this building was designed very efficiently to create an entry level, even for the market rate units, entry level units, so that they are more affordable than the adjacent towers that have been proposed on the the site. So the units are very modest in size, and it would be if both projects continue a combination of market rate and affordable housing in this building.
Well, I think it's important that both buildings get the same treatment here because we're short downtown. We've had a lot of discussions about that at this board level about affordable housing and getting folks down here. So I would hope that you guys would go away and look at how to treat this, because we're talking less than $500,000 here. That's what we're talking. You know, so why give it to the housing commission when we can give it to some people they can live? You know, and that's how I support it. The facade, the look, the dropping off the bags and having a place for Amazon and all those kind of things, I get it. But I think the people should get something too that can live in places like this. So I would hope that when you come back that you can demonstrate that, at least demonstrate that to me if that's my concern, or to the whole board or to the whole committee, because we need that in that area. And then find some places you can do some more additional storage, like Mr. Smith said, so it won't be on the balcony, so maybe you give up some space to do something else, you know, in your design.
Right, exactly. And I think with the reconfiguration of the ground floor level, as I was mentioning, that hasn't been worked out yet, we can work on that issue. And absolutely, I'll bring the issue of affordable housing back.
Well, let me ask staff. Staff, what would be required for the number of units here for low income in this project? Or the minimum, very minimum.
To avoid paying the inclusionary housing fee, they'd have to provide 10%, which would be 8 units in this project.
How many?
8 of the 72.
I would think you could find 8 units. Out of how many?
Out of 72.
Oh, I think you could find 8 units. That's a drop in the bucket. 72, okay. Is that right? 8 units, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I would hope that you find a way here, staff, and then the developer will find a way to kind of come in the middle so you can get your project built. I wouldn't let 8 units stop you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. I have Director Geisler up next here.
Thank you. Okay, so a couple questions. The deviations, I agree. I have a problem with the deviation on the storage. I think that's a pretty significant one when you're looking at the amount of storage that's not going to be there. So I would suggest working on that. That's, I think, an important one. The other deviations to me, I'm fine with, except for, is deviation number 2 still on the table, or you're changing that one because of the garage entry?
Yes, we'll be changing that, so okay. That will, in the next round, be off the table.
Okay, so that we don't have to think about that one. Okay. In terms of the design considerations, do we normally see 9-10-story buildings with sticks and stucco? Is that kind of tall for that sort of?
No, you can do 8-story and type 3 modified with the concrete podium and wood above. Jefferson's Maker's Quarter was that way.
Okay.
That you saw in December.
Yeah. Okay.
So, we would be 5/3.
Okay, gotcha. So the from staff level and design consideration level, you don't think that's going to be of issue?
No.
No, okay. I just do know. I don't know how the upkeep goes on those stucco buildings, because we all have stucco in our houses and it cracks and gets dirty. And so I just don't know, that big of a building, that tall, if there's how the sort of maintenance happens on that ongoing. I imagine that most developers have a plan for that. Is that the case, I suppose?
Sure, yeah. Just like all materials, the building will require maintenance, and also with stucco, it's paying attention and making sure you have joints in the right places and in the right distances, so that cracking is controlled.
Right. So, the corner here that you're showing on the front here, I really do like that corner the way it's designed. I think that's pretty cool with the corner windows, and so I'd hate to see that change because of any sort of design issue like that. So. I'd say please keep that if you can. With regard to the speaker in opposition, not opposition, just with her concerns, the canyoning effect and the shadows, and to me, this building isn't really all that tall, to be honest. It's, 10 stories or 9 stories, what have you. So did you do shadow study and with regard to how this would affect the neighbors, and how did that turn out?
Yes, we did. And since we are to the south of them, the building would cast some shadow on that adjacent property.
Okay, and Brad, maybe you can help me out too. So that's inevitable with building downtown. So
that is inevitable. That this is supposed to be the highest density, one of the highest density residential nodes, so it calls for high-rise structures.
Uh-huh.
Difficult to do a high-rise on this small of a lot.
Sure.
But they are maximizing the density consistent with the community plan. We did work with them early on, and they did set the building, the upper levels above the ground floor, back 5 feet to provide a little extra space for those adjacent residential units, which we typically do if they have residential units with windows close to the property line. We asked them to set back 5 feet, and that enables that facade to have windows in it as opposed to a 85-foot tall blank wall.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And the border you're sharing with the Y, you're saying, so those are going to be residential units that are going to look out their window and just see a wall. Basically.
So there are two residential units, one facing the north and one facing the south. So their primary windows will actually be facing either the street or on the opposite side. We just thought it was also nice to have additional windows on that facade for bedrooms, additional light in air. So thought that small slot and separation for construction reasons made sense.
Right, but at the end of the day, that is what it is. You can't really have the Y paint their wall or something, a sunset. I think the building does fit in terms of community character and bulk and scale, and I think you're doing a good job with the site, with the constrained size, and you are activating the pedestrian element there on the ground floor, and I think that the idea of the cafe is good. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Geisler. So I've got a series of questions here, and I'm going to rest at the end on the affordable housing piece because I really want to understand that better. But I want to start with the parking issue, the issue of parking the ground floor venting, is that self-vented because of the door, or does it require mechanical ventilation?
In a small area like this, typically you can do most of your venting through the garage door opening. And we'll look further once we fine tune now and define the size of this, if anything else is required. Because we're close on the ground floor to the adjacent property at the north, that is a fire-rated wall, so we will not be adding any vents or exhaust or intake along that facade. So if anything else has to happen beyond the garage door opening, we'll have to accommodate that with mechanical venting.
And probably in the direction of the street, it looks like, given the other constraints. Okay, that'd be kind of critical. The storage issue is a big issue, and I would dispute whether lower income individuals need more or less stuff. You know, frankly, if you're living in a small place and you can't afford a lot of new stuff, sometimes you hold on to things. And I can see these balconies becoming storage if we don't provide interior storage. And I know Mr. Smith has raised that issue in the past, and we certainly can see it even in high-income places. People use, if they don't have other storage, the exercise bicycles or all this stuff ends up out there. And this is a gateway to the city. What is the current use of the YWCA? Is it used by them? It is YWCA as opposed to YM.
Right.
Okay.
The YWCA building is a designated SRO site by the San Diego Housing Commission, so it is a pure residential use.
Okay, thank you. And in general, I actually do like the design. My first reaction to this was, given some of the very large, high density, necessary buildings we see here, the small footprint obviously drove you toward a smaller building. It seemed like a relatively good neighbor. I admit that the issue of solar access is a big one. We do not have solar access ordinances on our books here. Other cities do. And it is unfortunate, but yes, we have to acknowledge, even as I will have to support the height of this building, and we're not asking for any deviations, correct, Mr. Chopik, for height?
That's correct.
We're well under the actual allowable height of the site.
Correct.
It's an unfortunate, I think, inevitability of developing sites to their full potential. And stepping back is a small gesture. I think at nine stories, it's a small gesture, but I think it's an inevitability, unfortunately, of the zoning in that area. The podium, the question of the SDG&E and the podium, I wasn't entirely clear. Could you explain what issue arose last night's meeting about the SDG&E access? It looks like there's a big utilities issue. How is that? There we go. Okay, transformer vault. And what was the issue that you took away from last night's meeting?
The issue was, does this need to be a set of swing double doors versus a roll-up door? And absolutely, we'll, as we continue the process with the city, we've had some initial discussions with them in making sure that the vault size, height, access location is sufficient, which it is, but then the particulars now of developing it further of what type of door that actually is, absolutely will continue that process.
Okay, I just want to make sure I understood that. Thank you. Balconies, storage, okay. The parking issue. A couple of thoughts there. One is, are you even, given the new ordinance, are you even required to provide those 66 spaces?
They're being processed under the current regulations that did require parking, but they could take advantage of the new parking, no parking requirements, essentially. We've had a lot of discussions with the developer on this project and his other projects. He's a strong believer in providing parking. In fact, he was very concerned about the maximums being proposed. Mm-hmm. And so with the adopted regulations, there is a way to increase parking beyond the one space per unit if you do certain things, so they can continue to provide more parking than one space per unit, which is his preference on these projects.
Well, I wanted to ask a question for information, but to make it clear that if for any kind of a deviation or anything I might be asked for, really you're providing more parking ultimately with this agreement than you might legally be required to.
Sure. Right now the calculations are based on one per unit.
Right. Okay. And I would say that's an example, I think, of exactly what we're hoping we'll see out of this ordinance, is that we'll see aggregations of parking rather than every building having to provide its own, and then it becomes a more fluid commodity that can be assigned to different uses. And so this is kind of that principle in action, even though it isn't using
right.
that ordinance. I will have to say, if you go back to that corner, the southeastern corner, I think it was the end, yeah, when you described the building, suddenly I saw something I could not unsee, which is the different thicknesses of the floor plates, where you go from the concrete to the wood framing, and I can't unsee it. I know how that is once you
right.
see something like that. I'm wondering if it isn't worth actually differentiating it in some way. Whether it's a single line at that, because right now it's
right. Next and sure, that's actually a nice idea. Yeah, but we would look into that.
Okay, because I'm going to live in this town until I die, and I'm going to drive past that like once a week at least. So, but thank you for that. I want to talk a little bit now. This is the affordable housing portion, and it'd be nice when this is brought back for final review, if you could bring the developer with you, because there's questions. I know that Mr. Robinson had questions that you're not in a position to answer. Right now, as it's proposed, with not understanding it as a recipient site of off-site affordable, I just want to lay out the numbers, the math I like to do, which is it's paying $461,000 in lieu fees. At typical leverage rates, that would produce between 3.5 and 4 units when you look at the other funds that come in. That's 4 units. The inclusionary requirement would be 8. So this is a case where, standing on its own, I'd be a little disturbed by what's happening here. What I'm hearing now, though, which is really interesting, is that we've heard that other project talking about offsite. Is this intended to be the offsite recipient of other affordable housing from other fully market rate projects?
Yes, from the one that from the project that you'll actually see next.
Okay, but you mentioned that one. Are there any right. others?
Not at this time.
Okay. And so how many of the units would be needed to satisfy? Actually, it's a cash. It's a cash. It was five. No, I'm sorry. It's 5% of the existing on the other project. Is a 5%. Okay.
Right.
And we should get into that. That's a separate item. Legal counsel is probably nodding their head saying, yes, talk about this project. I'm intrigued because this is potentially a really good way of helping meet inclusionary obligations. The challenge for me, as we are reviewing those regulations right now, is that it's a very low bar to meet in some ways. This is a totally different animal because you're not just providing the $461,000 in lieu. You are, in fact, being the recipient of other someone else meeting that obligation. This is new territory, I think, for us. And I want to pay close attention to this because I think what you do here, I'm not really speaking to you, I'm speaking to the absent developer, what we do here is going to set a model, perhaps, for what goes on in the city. And I'd really like to understand the real implications of how this obligation is being shifted and whether or not it's a complex situation. I'm actually having just encountered it now in the last 15 minutes. Wrestling with it internally, so there'll be some discussion about that when this comes back for final review, I have no doubt. All that being said, from a design perspective, I may as well end on a nice note. I actually do like the general design of this. It is a friendly building. The first thing I thought when I saw it was a good neighbor building. The shadowing notwithstanding, it is, I think we see this throughout downtown, where we are starting to realize the full potential of the land. And I am concerned because it does, you know, it's an SRO unit. I don't want to degrade, you know, some of the lowest income housing that's here. We don't that's not an issue in front of us here today, unfortunately. The actual the size, the height are things that are well within the bounds of the zoning. And I think I feel like our hands are kind of tied in that particular respect. So with that, are there any other comments from the other directors? Are there questions from the applicant to clarify anything that has been discussed here today?
No other questions at my end. Thank you very much.
Okay. With that, this is just a preliminary design review. There's no action taken, so we will thank you, and we'll move on to item number 6. We'll give a moment here for swapping out here. And Mr. Chopik, you're once again invited to present.
Thank you, Chair Russell and members of the Design Review Committee. Bill Chopik, planner for Civic San Diego, and this is the first in Beach Amendment 2. This is actually the second amendment of this project. The project site is located on the south side of Beach Street between 1st and 2nd Avenues. Beach Street is, again, a designated two-way cycle track. And 1st Avenue is a one-way street in the south to north direction. This site is located within the Cortez neighborhood of the downtown community plan area. Some applicable downtown community plan goals are to provide a range of housing opportunities and to protect views, such as the Beach Street View Corridor, which this project is respecting with the 15-foot step back, and preserving and enhancing views. The project site is in the residential emphasis land use district. There's a maximum 20% limit of commercial use in the RE zone. However, this project is a 100% all residential project. Again, Beach Street is a designated view corridor with a 15-foot step back above 15 feet in above grade. And this site is also within the airport approach overlay zone that provides some supplemental regulations for the airport approach path to the San Diego International Airport, consistent with the airport land use compatibility plan. A previous project was approved originally in April of 2016 and then came back for an amendment in January 2017. We're now back to you with a second amendment to that original approval. The 31,000 square foot site would contain 429 dwelling units, equating to a density of 592 dwelling units per acre and a floor area ratio, or FAR, of 11.76. This project would contain 454 parking spaces in a podium parking, 5 levels above grade and 3 levels below grade. This is a 39-story building approved by the FAA and the San Diego County Airport Authority at actually 425 feet in height and 500 feet above mean sea level. Just a quick comparison of the last approval to this project, the dwelling unit count has gone up from 364 to 429 parking spaces, meeting the current standard of one space per dwelling unit plus 1 per 30 for guest parking. Parking has gone up from 395 to 454 parking spaces. The FAR and gross floor area has actually gone down a little bit, from 12.8 to 11.76. We're still at the same height, 39 stories, and the affordability, the last project proposed 23 off-site low-income units, and is now proposing 5% or 15 off-site very low-income units. So the base maximum FAR on this site is 8.0, and with 4 FAR bonuses, this is how we achieve the 11.76 FAR. With EcoRoof, certified LEED Silver standard, an FAR payment, and affordable housing FAR bonuses, as shown on this slide. Just getting into the affordability a little bit, the applicant is proposing 5% very low income off-site affordable units and has identified the last project you reviewed at 1060 C Street as a potential recipient of those 15 very low-income units. And because the 1060 C project is all 1- and 2-bedroom, the proportion of the bedroom mix would equate to about two-bedroom units and 12 one-bedroom units that would be affordable to very low-income residents. This 5% bonus is based on the 8.0 base FAR, and the remaining housing units above the base would pay an inclusionary housing fee. So this project would also pay a portion of inclusionary housing fee for those units above the base maximum. And we would work out those details with the San Diego Housing Commission. This 5% very low income qualifies for one incentive. The applicant would use this incentive for exceeding the minimum east-west tower dimension. The CCPDO limits east-west tower width to 130 feet. The applicant is proposing 141 feet of east-west tower width. Can be noted here that the north-south tower dimension is actually less than the east-west at 125 feet in the north-south direction. This is a copy of the airport approach overlay zone map C926. This is included in the staff report package. The project site is outlined on the map. The dotted line just represents an area of the map that had changed a number of years ago. The solid line that bisects the site is a difference of 50 feet in height. The deviation that's requested here is to increase the height limit on this airport overlay zone map by 68 to 88 feet because it's a sloped height plane. And noted that the FAA provided a determination of no hazard to air navigation for both the building and crane, so 500 feet above mean sea level for the building and 540 feet AMSL for the crane. The San Diego County Regional Airport Authority also provided a determination of consistency with the airport land use compatibility plan for the project that is before you today. So getting into some of the design changes, this shows the tower design before and the tower design after. And some questions came up at the DCPC pre-design subcommittee last night with regard to the treatment, the wall treatment of the new tower, whether that's a curtain wall or a window wall system. And there are some questions about how that really would appear if the diagonal members are on the same plane as the balconies and the units. This shows a before and after photograph, a depiction of the building with the driveway removed on Beach Street. So there would be a single driveway entry into this project with the Beach Street driveway removed. That's very beneficial for the two-way cycle track that is proposed and soon to be built on Beach Street. There was a discussion last night about these planters on the walls and how those planters get maintained. And the plants calling for a scissor lift is really questioned whether that maintenance of those planters with a scissor lift would really be effective in the long run, and some suggestion for perhaps maintaining these planters from inside the parking garage with maybe sliding windows where you could access the planters for maintenance. That was an issue that came up here. This is a southwest perspective, which wasn't included in the plan set that the applicant provided upon our request, so we could see that south wall. It's a blank concrete wall that's treated with texturing, both horizontal and vertical fluting on that concrete wall. This is about a 58-foot tall wall above the two-story Mixon Liquor and Deli building to the south. And there was some discussion about that wall treatment and how that would appear in the long run. Some other concerns raised were with the cleaning and maintenance of the building and the davit arms that would allow for cleaning of the walls and where they would be placed and located. So we did get into some of those details last night. And let me see. I think that pretty well summarizes the discussion last night. I think the DCPC pre-design subcommittee kind of liked the new tower design, but had some questions about the details. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jonathan Sherman, the architect for the project, to present the building.
Hi, Jonathan Sherman from AVRP Studios. Let me just bring my PowerPoint up here. Okay, so we've already presented this a few times to yourselves. As far as the design goes, most of what you're seeing today is just what's happened through our design development phase. Changes to the height, or changes to the height regulations have meant that we've had to come back in, and also there's been an addition of some units. But I'm going to mainly concentrate on the design. So we originally started off with a building that had two kind of faces. It had a city face that was more formal and orthogonal, and then we had a water face, which is the one facing the bay, which is more organic. And then we also concentrated on things like indoor and outdoor living, which is popular to the area, and maximizing views for the residents to the bay. So as the design has developed over the past couple of years, most of those features are still, most of the design concepts are still there, just refined. And if you look at the elevations of the tower now, probably more simplified, because we believed by making fewer gestures, but the right gestures, we were able to come out with an overall more attractive design for the city. I have a short, actually, before I go on to the video, most of the design changes so far have been to the tower. If you look at the base, there has been no changes to the base. It was generally received well. And the only real change is the exclusion of one of the garage entry, car entry portions on Beach Street, which is now going to be an amenity area for the residents. From last night's DCPC meeting, we realized because one of the main reasons for the change there is the new cycle track that's going in. So we believe that could create a good position to have a residence bike room. So that's one of the changes that we're going to make to the design. Let me go on to the short video here. Just because some of the changes are harder to see in still images, we thought it'd be good to be able to show it in motion, which is more like what we see as we're designing it in the office. So as you can see, it now stacks up, whereas before we used to have a larger area for the penthouse units. Now they follow the same floor plate up. The biggest design change is what we call the sails, which really is just a facade treatment with slightly differing glass and mullion structure. And again, that's another nod to the water side and the bay and San Diego as a city. Okay, as far as design goes, that's kind of it. It's still an evolving design. Any questions?
Are there questions before we go? We have one public speaker on this. No questions from the committee. I'll invite Mr. Smith to provide his comment. Noted as neutral.
Thank you, committee members. Gary Smith, president of Downtown Residents Group, again, because my board hasn't seen the revisions. I don't think they'll have a single issue with this building for two reasons. First of all, they really liked the building first time around, and this time it's been tweaked to be a little bit better. Second of all, if the renderings can be believed, the parking podium looks a heck of a lot better than it did last time, and it looks better than a lot of the parking podiums that we've seen come through here. The problem is, of course, a rendering is not what necessarily gets constructed. So this is one of those we'll have to wait and see what it looks like, and we're going to have to live with it because that's the way it is. As long as we choose to allow the parking podiums to be built. Taking that second garage entrance off and making this work, a lot of people don't believe it, but there is not a consistent rush hour out of a building or in a building. Because of the way jobs are scattered around, everybody leaves at a different time, everybody comes home at a different time. So one entrance is not a handicap to that many levels of parking. Think this building will work very well. It's situated in a great place. It's nice to see some things coming out of that part of the city. And it's nice that it didn't take forever to get the FAA or the County Airport Authority approval. If there were a way to put that and have them draw a line and say, hey, this is acceptable, this isn't, and make it more routine so we don't have to go through this huge effort every time we want to do that, it would be nice, but I'm not sure it's something that can happen because every bureaucracy likes to exert its authority. But we would urge you to send this building on. We really don't see any bad thing except for the parking podium. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. With that, I turn to the committee members. I see Director Geisler first on the lights, and Mr. Robinson is next.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, congrats on the airport, getting that approved ahead of time, and you've got that in writing, I'm guessing, so that's fantastic. Okay, so I think it's probably the rendering. So when I first saw it, I didn't understand the building really at all. And then when you showed me the video and this rendering that I'm looking at right now, mm-hmm. it looks so much different than some of the other ones, because I think the sails you put in, that they're really cool. It's just on some of the pictures, it's really hard to tell what's happening there, whether it's a glass wall. I wasn't quite sure. And so I don't know if that's how it's going to look once it's built, where you're kind of not sure what's happening, or if you maybe want to differentiate them on the edges. I don't know. That's your job. But I'm just telling you what I was seeing when I was looking at it. I wasn't quite sure. But I think the building, the change is really cool. And I think that the from the city side, that change was like a home run, because the initial city side kind of looked like this offering to the gods or something. I'm not sure what it was. But now I think it looks really cool. So can you remind me, so this is an amendment? So what? This was already approved once by this board, or?
It was approved by Civic San Diego.
By the full board.
Back in January 2017.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so.
Once previously before that. So
right.
It's been approved twice before.
Okay. Is this going to be the last one?
Hopefully.
Okay. The one And one of the reasons I like the changes so much is you're really getting away from those brim hat look that's been happening on so many of our buildings. So I really like that you did that. The one, you showed the liquor store and there was that blank wall above it, that white wall.
Yeah, if we can go to...
Yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what, I'm not sure what's happening there or if you're still working on that part or what staff thinks about the way that kind of plays out there.
Well, I think for the next round of review, which is going to occur later this month, we'll have an enlarged elevation of that south elevation so you can really see more what's going on.
Okay.
The architect can, I think, address the materials or treatment of that wall. I think the difference in coloration there is just a difference between vertical fluting and horizontal fluting.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I think those are my comments. So I believe you need a motion, correct, on this one today?
This is an action item to move this to the full board.
Okay. I'm comfortable to make the motion to move this to the full board, and I know when you're coming back, you'll show us a little bit more of those other items. So, is that the nighttime rendering right there? That's what?
Yes.
Okay, so there's no other nighttime bells or whistles to it, lighting, anything? Just
as of yet, no.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do you want to speak before?
Or yeah. Heard?
Okay, so we'll go to Mr. Robinson and see if there's a second after that.
Okay. All right, this is a staff question. I'm confused, so maybe you can unconfuse me, about the on-site and off-site of the housing. Help me understand that.
They're proposing, they're achieving one of their density bonuses through providing 5% affordable housing. So there will be, to qualify for that, 5% of the base units will be very low-income units, and those will be located off in an off-site location, not within this project. And so those 19, or 7 units, 15 units, sorry, will be located in another one of their projects. For example, the project you just saw, the 1060C project. They still have to be the same type of units, one bedroom, two bedroom proportionally as this project, but they can be provided off-site. Because it's only 5%, not 10%, they have to pay some inclusionary housing fee still. We have a meeting set up with the Housing Commission staff to start figuring that out. As these get more complicated with the off-site location and exactly how they calculate the fees, we're trying to find that out to be more specific, but that is 5% of the base units provided in an off-site location.
So we're talking the same group here on the one we saw a few minutes
yes,
ago.
Yes, same ownership. Right?
Well, how come you guys couldn't just say that? You kind of skirted that. And so you get me saying things that I shouldn't say, and that bothers me. You know, just be upfront with us about it, and then I can kind of work with that. But when you tell me no, 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 and then we get to the sky rise here, then we're going to move it back over there. That's crazy. You know, I don't know what's in your head. I don't know what y'all been talking about in the back room. But it would be nice if you just would say, you know, don't have me guessing. And so now we're talking the new unit, the high rise here, which I like. There's no affordable housing, low income, what? Nothing is, yes, no, in there, this project here.
There'll be no affordable units in this particular project. They are qualifying by providing those off-site units. They may be in the project you just saw. They may be in another one of their projects. They haven't executed that final decision.
What other project?
They have a couple other projects you've seen in the last couple of months, Park and Broadway and 11th and Beeb projects, as well as one in Lily. They actually have 5 projects going through the process right now.
So we haven't approved those?
No, they're all 5 are in the process.
So that's a crapshoot here. You could do anything to me with that. We'll be looking for eggs for a while.
Well, in order to get the density in this particular project, they have to provide those 15 units either on-site or off-site within the downtown area.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Brad. Somebody's going to have to show me something in writing, show me something that I can go for before I can support. I want to support the project, but man, it's kind of like a, it's like a, the domino thing. It's a crap thing going on here where the dice is all over the table and I don't know where they're going to stop. Mm-hmm. I don't like that, you know. It's just not okay. And then every time we get to one of these nice buildings, it's always where the developer want to shift the people who have nothing out of these sites. And I don't get it. To me, that's a form of discrimination. I don't care what you call it. You call it whatever you want. I'm not good enough to live there. And it would seem to me that developer here, or somebody needs to say, you know, no, we want to do something. I know about this policy, this thing with the city and this inclusionary. I get that and I hate it. But I'm hating it more and more when I see it happening before my eyes. And it's hard for me to support with me being a person of color. You know, I haven't always had things in my life. You know, what I got now I had to earn. And I would hope some of those folks could do that, but some of them just can't. But I'm here. I'm the one to say it, you know. I'm not comfortable. When I get to where I'm at, people get comfortable, and so what's happening in the valley is crazy. There's no change in the valley, so I guess I'm the voice for that. But when you guys come back with this project, I would hope that you would come back with something that makes sense. Also, don't, if you go for something about putting some affordable living in some of these sites, that you don't try to put them all on the same floor and lump them together. So that's another issue I have, because to me that's clear discrimination. Keep them over there, keep them out the way. I experienced that with the city of San Diego in Graveyard. In Mount Hope Cemetery, they did the same thing. Put them over in the corner. They can't pay to get buried, just put them over there and leave them. That happened. So I would hope the staff would kind of work with this, Brad, you guys, to try to see what we can do. I understand the rules, but within the guidelines of the rules, we always find a way if we want to find a way, because they found a way, and they're still finding a way. I think Gary said it best. It's just a simple engineering thing, but this is just a simple moving people around and getting something for the people. So I would hope that the architect and the developer would come back with something that's more pleasing and not do the scramble leg effect with us. That's my interpretation of it. It's not personal. It's just my interpretation of it. Thank you.
So I will kind of tag along on some of that. Let me start with what I like, which is, I think that from the design perspective, this is a more striking building, and it certainly adds a little more flair and begins to vary from what we see downtown. So I thank you for that. Clearly, you've taken the time with reiterations and changes to introduce other kinds of design changes. Certainly very positive. And I'll let that rest. The housing side is complex, and I will say I'd like to see this laid out a little bit better, because how do we calculate the remaining obligation? The 5% that's being done off-site, what is the actual financial obligation of the developer on that site? I think we need to understand that in the context of what is the standard they're meeting then for maybe half their obligation to be met, in half of what an in-lieu fee obligation might be, or what? I mean, this is new territory. I get that. I'm seeing these two projects. I would have appreciated perhaps if that was more explicit in the materials coming up, that these were related in that way, and maybe there's a legal reason they couldn't be. But it's important that this narrative came out here and we're understanding. It is certainly a practice in other municipalities in the county and elsewhere in the state that you do have a mitigation or a affordable housing bank or an inclusionary bank that developers can buy units in to meet their obligations. We haven't implemented something like that here, and this is getting very close to that within the developer's own portfolio here. And I think we need to make sure that we are upholding the highest standards as we do that. So the quality of the housing, the comparability, the obligation is met and not skirted. All of those things are things I think are going to be really important. And I think that the proponents are going to be happy that they're hearing it with Civic, because I think when things go back to the city, it's going to be a tougher time right, on all these issues. So it's, yeah, I just want to make sure that, I mean, because it is hard to look at a really, really high quality building near the harbor front, and that the obligation is being met near City College in a, you know, a less auspicious building. That doesn't really have, it's hard to do equivalents. You can do bedroom size equivalents, but you really can't do much else in terms of the quality of life, in terms of the setting. I understand that we're also seeing that we're seeing a very expensive building type with very high priced units meeting its obligation in a much lower cost building construction type, which, again, you can get a higher yield, but let's be mindful of the fact that you know, we should be producing more. I understand within the inclusionary requirements that are going to be considered at rules a year from now, that whole game could be changed as well. That's not relevant, directly relevant, but I think this is a project that illustrates why there is a cry among some of the advocates on the inclusionary issue to require building on site. Things like this, I will defer to Mr. Robinson and his experiences of discrimination, but this begins to look like that, you know? And so anyway, I'm throwing it all out there. This is design review. He will be coming back to the board. We hope the developer will be present to address some of the questions. I'd like to see this in the context of the overall deal making that goes on with the units provided off-site. From a design perspective, again, I'll compliment AVRP and I'm sorry, your name, sir? Are you the principal?
Jonathan.
Jonathan, for the work.
Designer.
And I am prepared to provide the second to move it on to the full board. So, unless you know, he's granting me the second. Thank you, Mr. Robinson. There's a motion by Mr. Geisler, a second by myself to move this on to the full board, and I will call the question. Okay, please vote.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. With that, I think we're at the end of our agenda. I look to Ms. Haley to correct me if I'm wrong. It's electronic here. I'm lagging a bit. We're done. With that, then, we will adjourn the meeting of the Design Review Committee, meeting of April 10th, 2019.